The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Natalie Nahai, and this week's show is sponsored by Squarespace. To discover the simplest way to build beautiful websites, just go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. This week, it's January, it's raining, and we are all back at work. But just how much work are we actually getting done in today's tech-fueled world? We've all been there trying to complete one simple task while being bombarded by a steady stream of emails, instant messages, texts, and then there's Facebook and Twitter and God knows what else. So are digital technologies beneficial or problematic for our workflow, our careers, and our general well-being? And how can we use tech more wisely to make the most of our professional lives? Stay tuned. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. So with us in the studio to discuss some of these issues, we have Caroline Webb, author of How to Have a Good Day, Anthony Mayfield from digital strategy agency Brilliant Noise, and Dr. Lawrence Ampofo from Digital Mindfulness, an organisation that promotes balanced interactions with tech. Welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to have you all here this morning. So hands up, who amongst us woke up this morning and the first thing that we did was check our phones? Okay, so there's four of us in the studio. Three of us have our hands up. I'm not going to make them upset by disclosing who that was. Would you say that you have a healthy relationship with your phone? Or are we sort of constantly pulling it out to check things? Maybe we'll start with you, Anthony.
Well, yes, I would say that I have a healthy relationship with my phone. Going back to the did I look at it first thing this morning, well, I used it as an alarm clock, but no, I didn't start checking emails again because I've really worked at the habit of not looking at social media and emails first thing in the morning. And one of the things I've done is taken off all of the email and Twitter and social apps and put them on the last page of the phone. So they're less distracting there. I'm less likely to go and have a look at them. And it stops that immediately I'm getting up, walking around the room, getting ready and checking Twitter, immediately multitasking, first thing in the day, breaking the golden rule.
So multitasking then and sort of probably stumbling into things. Caroline, why would you say that multitasking is a problem?
Well, it's very tempting to multitask. We're surrounded by all of these gorgeous, tempting distractions. Emails and instant messages and so on make us feel wanted and needed. And it makes us feel busy to be dealing with them nonstop. And so multitasking feels like a natural way to balance the fact that you've got work to do, but you need to stay online and in the flow. But it's actually a terrible idea. Multitasking, unfortunately, makes us make between 2 and 4 times as many errors, and it slows us down even further on top of that. So far from helping us get more done in the day, it actually lengthens our days and makes us more stressed in the meantime.
Wow. Okay. Well, aren't there exceptions? Because some tasks surely are completely automatic, like, you know, requiring no conscious thoughts. You know, I'll just do a couple of tweets or maybe check an email here or there to make sure the boss isn't breathing down my neck. Are there exceptions to this?
There kind of are and there kind of aren't. So, of course, no answer is straightforward. It helps to think about the brain having two different systems. There is something which I call the deliberate system, which is responsible for all the conscious grown-up stuff like reasoning and self-control and planning. But it's quite limited in capacity, and it can only do one thing at a time. And then there is the huge amount of the rest of the brain's real estate, which is the automatic system that takes care of everything else that we do. And we're not generally aware of it. And that part of the brain, it is possible for that part of the brain to do more than one thing at once. So if a task is truly automatic, requiring no conscious thought from us at all, yeah, okay, we can do that in parallel with something else. But the moment that something requires some conscious thought, we're back in the mode of really only being able to do one thing at a time. And it's because we can only do one thing at a time with our conscious brain that we slow down and make mistakes when we try and ask it to do more than one thing at once.
So are all these digital conveniences that we now have at our fingertips making us constantly distracted and less able to concentrate? Maybe Lawrence, you'd like to jump in here.
That's a really interesting question. The data would suggest that everybody is to some degree experiencing some sort of distraction, or they're finding some sort of stress by the overuse of digital devices. And I think that's particularly so because everywhere we look, you know, in major metropolitan cities, the whole city is digitized now. And the problem with that is that basically when we use digital devices, it does take up a little bit of our, what they say, our cognitive load. It does impacts upon our ability to sense the environment around us, whether that is in a social setting or if we're just kind of out on the street. And so technology does do this to us.
So do you think there's also that desire for the next fix, that jolt of stimulation? So, you know, when you get these little dopamine spikes from doing something that's pleasurable or rewarding, but it's never quite enough to be really satisfying. Do you think that's something that technology does too well?
I think that it's really important to know that, and I think a lot of people don't know this so much, is that when we do use this technology, they're very much, they're designed in such a way as to appeal to our senses and to very easily encourage habits that people might kind of ascribe to addiction or compulsion. So there are lots of analogies people have used to use for technology, such as, you know, for example, addiction. People say that technology is as addictive as, say, cigarettes or sugar in that way. So technology does do that very, very, very well. And it's so abundant. It's everywhere around us. We do see mediatized or digitized imagery, messages all around us. So it's very, very difficult for us to, I think, get away from that. And so we're really learning, I think, how to be in that environment.
And there is an argument to be made for the fact that it might be harming our ability to think and to be creative. Does anyone want to jump in on that particularly hot topic?
I think the evidence is really clear. It's a bit depressing, actually. As I said before, there's no doubt that when you look at all of the studies on multitasking, and multitasking in our everyday life, of course, means exactly what we're talking about. It means being interrupted by technology and thinking that we can answer the phone, check our email, read a document, browse to a new fantastic website that we've just discovered. I mean, we're doing these things all the time in parallel. And the evidence is really clear. It does make us less smart. And it's not just in terms of analytical tasks. It's also the studies showing that the quality of decision making takes a dive as well, and creativity. There's some fascinating work by Teresa Amabile on creativity in the workplace, which shows that people are most creative when they have blocks of undistracted time.
But can the random information flow that we're subjected to, or we can stumble across when we're online using social media, be a source of inspiration and creativity?
Well, I think the reason that we find it so difficult to go offline is, of course, yes, it is stimulating. Whenever we get a ping or a buzz, there's a promise of something new and interesting. And things that are interesting are candy for the brain. I mean, that's rewarding for the reward system. So, of course, it promises something exciting. What you really need to do is to think about, well, how can I stack other types of rewards up that are equally interesting and exciting so that the temptation to multitask is reduced? So, for example, how can you reward yourself for being offline?
I think, Lawrence, you're nodding there. Have you got something that you'd like to bring into this?
I think definitely that point is valid. But what we also need to consider is that in terms of creativity and helping us to think, technology is an extraordinary enabler of that in terms of enabling us to collaborate. Wikipedia is just an incredible example of that. So this ability to have, for example, ambient awareness, being aware of how people feel to a lesser or greater degree by looking at our social networks, the ability, and I think, again, you might have something to say about this, to exchange or deliver empathy or different emotions online. Technology does facilitate that, but it's at a very shallow level, definitely not at the level at which that we get when we're in person with other people.
Mm. So, Anthony, you actually help businesses cope with the digital age and some of the problems that we're discussing now. What are some of the issues that you're seeing with employees?
Distraction comes up a lot, and just the kind of overwhelming volume of things like emails. And actually what makes that worse in an organization is kind of cultures build up around things like presenteeism, like appearing to be very, very responsive on email. You know, often say to people, you know, hands up, how many people are measured on how many meetings they go to and how many emails they answer a day. And no one puts their hand up, and yet they devote huge amounts of the best quality time in their day to doing these things. So we just quite often point out to them that what's the work, what's the quality work that you want to get done, and how are you going to get to that, and how are you going to get to that not just as an individual but as a team and as an organization.
And there's also social media, which I know that you mentioned about in terms of the fact that it doesn't really help us to form what one would call real relationships and can actually foster a kind of fake intimacy. How can people feel disconnected in the age of technological connectivity when you've got access to people who might have similar values to yourself that you might not have had access to before? What is it about this imbalance or this paradox between greater connectivity and more aloneness?
Well, there's a number of things, but one of them is that just as apps and social networks are quite often designed for interruption, I mean, that's what they're designed to do, is to compete for your attention, both to download them and then to use them more. So you have to spend spend 20 minutes on a smartphone to turn off all of the different notification options. But they're also designed to give you status. You know, the gamification was a buzzword a few years ago in the industry. So one of the reasons they can be quite negative is actually you're validating yourself through retweets or likes. And it can be really upsetting for people who put a lot of emotional investment in that when they think they've been slighted or when they're not getting enough attention.
So who is the master and who is the servant in this kind of relationship?
Yeah, that's the whole question with devices and technology. And I think that's what we need to think about, is who jumps fastest, you or the phone, when the other one wants when wants the other.
Mm. So is it just about jumping faster?
I think that the benefits of technology, I should say, I think they're enormous. I think it's extraordinary how much more connected we all feel. I know that there's a sort of trope about the superficiality of connections. But honestly, I mean, talking personally, I feel way more connected to the network of people that I've met throughout my life in different countries, in different companies, people that I would have left behind and never seen again, never reconnected with, people who were quite special to me. So I think that there's a way of using technology in service of the things that we know are important. So, for example, just sticking with social media for a moment, I think that using social media to connect with people in real life has been a really positive part of my experience of using social media for more positive ends. I have found a really important mentor through Twitter. So I think it's definitely important not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It is about what you were saying, Anthony, about figuring out new techniques, new habits to make sure that you're using the technology in ways that serve you. It's a bit like, you know, to the extent that we love donuts. Everybody loves donuts. Donuts can be fantastic. They're wonderful. You just don't want to eat them all the time. You need to figure out a routine for when you need your donuts.
So speaking of donuts, those are the problems. Coming up next, what are we going to do about it?
If you've got a mobile business, you need an easy way to take multiple payment types with one integration. With Braintree, you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, credit and debit cards, and more. Braintree also has quick, knowledgeable developer support, so there's help whenever you need it. The Braintree V.0 SDK. One snippet of code and you're all set up and ready to start taking payments from customers around the world. To find out more and for your first £30,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/techweekly.
Steve Jobs once said that computers are bicycles for the mind. So what kind of cyclists do we want to be? Do we want to be those ones with those horrible GoPros on our head? Maybe not. Anthony, I guess, first of all, we need to think more critically about the digital tools that we use. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's one thing that can improve your relationship with technology and how much you get out of it and all those positive benefits we were talking about, it's just reflecting and saying, how does this affect me? You know, Marshall McLuhan said, we shape our tools and then our tools shape us. Well, you know, why are all your meetings an hour long? Because that's the slot it defaults to in Outlook or in any calendar app. It's the same with spreadsheets. It's the same with word processors. And it's the same with all of the tools on our phone. They change how we think, they change how we operate. So critically thinking is like, what do I want to get done? And what are the right tools at the right time to support me in that? We talked about distraction and ideas being great. Well, that's fantastic when you're in the inspiration phase, but look at the cognitive heavy lifters, the people who really have to focus in order to produce: writers, coders, designers. They all talk about workflow. They all completely focus in on the task in hand and do everything they can to eliminate distractions. They have rituals, they have software to turn off. So that critical thinking is like, how is this affecting me? Is this how I want to behave? And sort of through the day, at the end of the day, regularly, during the month, thinking like, are these tools right?
So really asking yourself that conscious question. Now, Caroline, I know that your book is full of fantastic and simple tips for increasing our productivity. Can you tell us a little bit about this kind of focused single tasking that people can use?
Mm. So there are lots of things that can help us single task. One obvious thing is to put your phone on airplane mode. It's a very simple thing because it's essentially one button, so it makes it very easy. And that's a very good way of allowing yourself to keep your phone close, but to turn it off for periods of time. I have to say that when I'm really distractible, I also need to close down my email program and sometimes even my browser on my laptop. All of these things just put temptation just a tiny bit further out of reach. I also like wearing enormous headphones. We're laughing because we're also wearing enormous headphones right now. I like wearing enormous noise-cancelling headphones. That just cuts out a bit of ambient noise and helps, again, focus a little further. And I like setting a timer, which I put on my desk, and it counts down the time that I have to stay offline. And that's really helpful because your brain gets a little reward, a buzz from a ping that an email makes when it comes in. And you need to kind of replace that a little bit. So I find that the timer counting down to zero gives me a single point of focus. And when it beeps, I feel great. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit, you know, perhaps tiny bit pathetic, but it really does make me feel like, yeah, I did it.
Achieved something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that actually does sound, you say it sounds pathetic. I actually think it sounds quite difficult. And for many people who've tried it, it's really hard and you can get itchy feet, so to speak. So what are some of the realistic strategies for making this kind of single tasking or offline tasking work? How can we remove all distractions? Lawrence, do you have any ideas around this?
I think this is all about now, attention, and how we can build up and harness this attention so we can use it for ourselves and it's not being directed by someone or something else. I'm really a big fan of enabling people to become more digitally resilient. I find so that we're not kind of shifting our eyeballs or our attention between screens, but that we're actually able to tap into, for example, flow. They were able to access that higher level of consciousness and higher level of focus on one particular task. Because then, for example, our productivity goes up, our stress levels go down. Doing things like conscious communication, actually trying to understand and empathize with the person that we're contacting, who might be on the other side of the world or on the other side of the room. Doing things like mindfulness, trying to be not so much meditation, but doing mindfulness, trying to pay attention to our attention and where we place that online. That's obviously quite a difficult thing to do in a digital setting because then here and now, as the spiritual traditions will attest to, you have to be in the here and now, and here and now is beautiful, and that's where we have to put ourselves, not in the past or in the future. But of course, if we do that digitally, the digital now, there's everything happening all at once, and it's impossible. You would go into some kind of neurosis. So learning how to pay attention to our attention is really, really critical, I think. And that's very much a skill that we can definitely teach to young children, but also to adults.
So do you think it's realistic when we're talking about things like being mindful and being monofocused and taking ourselves offline? Is it a realistic way to approach work, especially when, like you were saying, Anthony, people expect us to be contactable 24/7?
Being mindful and being critical about how you work is a really, really good start. But then you need to have conversations with your colleagues. And this is where the science in Caroline's book and the kind of points we can pick up from similar books about behavioural science can really back you up. You can go and talk to colleagues about, this is why I'm going to work in this way. This is why we should try working in this way. But as well, it's mindfulness is such a great tool in this, just thinking and being aware of how we're feeling and how digital tools making us feel, and then talking about it with your team.
Because a lot of it is very compulsive. You know, when we get a tweet or we get an email, we feel like we have to have that immediate response. Is there a way of slowing that down, maybe?
I think what the technologies enable us to do is they enable us to form habits very, very quickly, and that's why they become so compulsive. It's so easy to respond to a notification or an email or even our phone ringing, or if we think the phone's ringing, to respond to it. So understanding that, understanding how to form the habits that we want to have with our technology, I think is really, really important. And there's very robust science behind this in terms of forming the habits that we actually want to have and the relationship we want to have with our technology. So that, for example, with the way that I use my tech, there are certain groups of people that know that I finish work at a certain time. And that's it. I'm uncontactable until the next day. And that might involve a certain element of training people. But I guess that's my the work culture that I'm building up for myself. In addition, emotional intelligence, that ability to empathize and try and understand how other people might be feeling as a result of their interactions in a digitized environment, I think is really, really important.
I think we shouldn't underestimate the value of certainty and clarity to our colleagues either. We often think that we're serving them best by being online all the time, but obviously being online all the time slows us down. So we might end up actually replying to people in a less effective, less intelligent, and perhaps even less timely way if we are trying to be online all the time. I've seen it's incredibly powerful to simply say, this is when I'm offline. This is when I'm online. And to be a bit bolder about, for example, setting autoresponders, even just for a couple of hours rather than just for the big vacation, to say, I'm offline for the next couple of hours. This is how you can reach me if you really need to. And the benefit of that is certainty is in itself rewarding for people's brains. So by giving people that certainty and that clarity, it's surprisingly helpful for them in managing their own workflow because they know when that you're going to get back to them.
Anthony, just want to come in quickly at the end here before we move on to transformative technologies. You actually help companies work with tech. What strategies do you give them to enable them to become more productive and to reduce tech-induced stress?
Well, there are all sorts of little tactical tips that you can give people. One of the most powerful is to start trying to change people over to a bias for action, as we call it. There's a lovely site called unlessihear differently.com, which is just dedicated to this one idea that instead of asking for permission on email and CCing the world, that you just let colleagues or send them an email saying, unless I hear differently, this is what I'm going to do. And that's a good way to start bottom-up change in an organization and just change your habits so that you can be more agile. But ultimately, it's a leadership question, which is why we end up trying to work as closely as we can with the leaders of organisations. They need to understand not only is new technology come along during their career quite often that's changed how communications work, but it's not the same as it is for them, as it is for their customers and their employees. I remember one advertising company CEO saying at a conference that he hated people putting on out-of-office messages and even when they're on holiday, and that he never did and they should reply immediately even if they were on holiday. That's really difficult, especially when you find out that he's got four PAs.
Yeah, standards. It's not an equivalence there at all. So coming up next then, could the solution to our tech addiction lie in tech itself? That's after this.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/Guardian.
Welcome back. So it's got a bad press so far, but can digital technology be used to actually improve our well-being? Can technologies be created that enable us to be our best selves in the workplace and in private? Lawrence, you're a great believer in this. What is transformative technology?
So transformative technology is the term given to tech that actively promotes and improves our psychological and physiological well-being.
Okay, so I've read about things like Spire, which is a wearable personal mindfulness coach, which has biofeedback sensors to measure outputs such as heart rate, which encourages us to be more mindful of our stress levels. Do you think that these sorts of interventions can be effective?
I think they're really interesting, and the research that's coming off the back of them is very, very encouraging. So, for example, Spire. Spire is a really great tool. It's a little wearable device that attaches to you. It can kind of connects to your phone. I'm not sure how entirely healthy that is, but but it connects to your phone and it monitors your breathing rate, so it knows when you're experiencing high stress levels and encourages you to take a moment to breathe more deeply, which then brings more oxygen to your brain, lowers your stress level, and then enables you to go on with your day. Another product that I know of is Muse, which enables you, which is incredible, gives you real-time feedback when you're meditating, so you can see your brain waves and know how your meditation is going in real time. Mm-hmm. And it can play sounds, like, for example, nature sounds or music, to let you know when you're kind of not doing so well and bring you back down into that meditative state.
But isn't there something nice about the mystery of not knowing? As from a psychological perspective, not having that certainty, dancing in the ambiguity and just finding our way through life through experience without this constant feedback. Is there something there around technology maybe taking something away from our experience of what it is to be human?
I think when we over-rely on technology, when we rely on, say, Muse to help us meditate, when we rely on Spire to know when our stress levels are high, I think that's when it takes away from our humanity. But insofar as a training device, you know, if you tell people to go meditate, that's quite a difficult task and people spend lifetimes trying to perfect it. But if we can use it as a training device, perhaps.
Like training wheels.
Exactly.
And once you've got it, you can take the wheels off.
Yeah, yeah.
I think technology is neutral, right? I mean, it can be good, it can be bad. It's just a channel for influencing the way that we live. Once upon a time, that role was played by books, hopefully still is. Before that, the role was played by oral storytelling traditions. The point is, we always have had ways of sharing information, and whenever we have a new way of sharing information, whether it's the postal service or whether it's books, the printing press, there's always people throwing their hands up in the air saying, this is terrible, this is going to destroy the way that we live, this is going to make us less present and less attentive to the things that really matter. I think that we're just in a phase where the accelerations in technology are a little bit outstripping our ways of using the current technology. Just as when large books were invented, they had to invent indexes in order to help people find their way through. That was a big breakthrough. I think that we're still fumbling around trying to find, well, what's the index for the modern era? So some of these apps, I think, are incredibly helpful.
So you mentioned before about the Stay Focused app. Now, I want to challenge you a little bit on whether technology is truly neutral, because I think technologies are designed to accomplish certain goals. So for instance, with Stay Focused, the clue's in the name, it's the idea that it wants to help us to remain more focused. With email, the purpose of email is that we send email. So surely the purpose is to send more email. What are some of the things that we can do with technology to help us use it perhaps more wisely?
Well, I do use apps that fight fire with fire. So you mentioned the Stay Focused app. Honestly, I think that I wouldn't have got my book finished had it not been for apps like that that place a cap on my use of, say, social media. So I would allow myself 10 minutes of social media time between 10 a.m. in the morning and 10 p.m. at night. And that was quite a tight cap to put on my activity. Sometimes I loosened it a little bit. But that, for me, meant that I was strongly associating my time on social media with my downtime, with my social time. It was sort of putting it in its place in a way. And obviously, I allowed myself all the time I wanted at the weekend. So it's a way of just aligning the way that you use the technology with the right time to use it in that way.
I think you're right, Natalie, that, you know, technology has quite often specific applications have an intention designed into them. They're designed for distraction or they're designed for a certain thing. But that doesn't mean you need to use them in that way, which is again where the critical thinking comes back in. I think if there's one thing you can do, it's don't accept the default settings on anything. Think about how to redesign or tweak that tool to suit the way you want to work. I love apps for getting more focused. I got into meditation using the Buddhify app, which is just beautiful, lots of tiny little meditations. And someone recently introduced me to Productive, which is just a habit setting app. So it reminds every day you go through and you go, did you run? Did you meditate? Did you record the calories you're eating? Did you avoid crumpets? No.
Doesn't that piss you off? Like, I would look at my phone and be like, this is another reason why I hate you. Just
not,
get off my phone.
What if you've designed it?
Yeah,
you're just kind of like listening to your wiser self, like going, like, actually, this is how I'm going to be today, and then your tired self who's maybe ready to make some poor food or alcohol choices would go, no, this getting is what supported. I wanted to do this morning. I'm going to do something else instead.
That is really interesting, though, I think, because certainly when we have these wearable devices, when we achieve our goals on them, we feel really, really good. And the message, the notification that we get makes us feel really, really good. But conversely, when we don't manage to take 10,000 steps and we are on that diet or we do have that fitness plan, how does that make us feel? How does that affect our well-being?
One of the best breakthroughs I've had more recently, because this is an ongoing thing of always trying to work better with technology. One of the best breakthroughs I've had with my task list app is just to be more realistic, which is, I think, something you talk about, Caroline, being more realistic and being able to complete a day. And actually looking, the tasks used to disappear once I'd done them, but then I found the thing where you can look at all the ticked ones and you look through and you go, do you know what? It's lunchtime and I've done two pretty major things already. Everything else today is a bonus. I don't have to keep feeling guilty that I can't fit in somehow 2 or 3 days worth of work into one day.
So it sounds like, even though maybe on the surface there's an inherent contradiction in using tech to rescue ourselves from tech, it sounds like there's a keener insight there, which is around enabling tech to show us, like a mirror, the behaviours that we've created for ourselves and giving us more choice as to how we use them. Well, that's pretty much all we have time for this week. Big thanks to all my guests today, to Caroline Webb, Anthony Mayfield and Dr. Laurence Ampofo. I've been Natalie Nahai. You can find me on Twitter at Natalie Nahai. This week's producer was Simon Barnard. And thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again next week.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.